So these days, the trend is more for a solid sofa, adding patterns in the pillows and the chairs and the rug, the accessories. So that was a huge process that happened with Great Rooms more than anything, I think, too. So knowing what you're committed to of other pieces in the space, and if you do have a sentimental value to something, can we repurpose it? Can we restain it? Can we make it work with the new introductions to the house? Or is there, we are not doing one thing to this. It's so important to me. My grandma gave it to me. However that works, we need to know that ahead of time. Because the end, you want it to look cohesive. And sometimes people don't care about the cohesive part of it. It means a lot to them. Or they traveled somewhere and they love it. So all those things are like, I always wish that clients had all that information the first meeting. It doesn't always happen. But that's where, you know, you get to know them. You go to their house and you find more information that way.
Welcome to another episode of Innovation Insights, where we dive deep into the minds shaping the future of industries through innovation, creativity, and groundbreaking research. We believe that innovation happens in all aspects of life. I am your host today, Dr. Yolanda Sanders. Today, we're thrilled to have with us Robin Julek, and she is a multifaceted design consultant who brings over two decades of experience in home fashion, environmental branding, and fine jewelry. Robin's passion for weaving personal and visual stories into her work shaped her career and led to her. Robin's passion for weaving personal and visual stories into her work shaped her career and led her to establish two businesses. A true innovator, Robin harnesses the power of social media to bring people together, creating collaborative groups that spark creativity and foster connection. Her leadership skills shone brightly as a student when she co-coordinated the Chic Street Fashion Show at Colorado State University in 1991, which I met Robin when she was a student at Colorado State University. And so all of these really demonstrate her knack for leading visionary projects. Robin is deeply committed to personal growth and driven by forward-thinking organizations and individuals. She enjoys spending time with her family, photography, and new fashion trends. As a consultant with Innovation Insights, Robin is eager to share her insights on a variety of topics, including the approach of young professionals to furniture shopping, success strategies for young design consultants, and the pivotal role of branding and environmental branding in making a lasting impression. So today, we'll dive into these topics and more, uncovering the layers of Robin's rich career journey and her impact on the design world. So stay tuned and help me welcome Robin Julek to our Innovation Insights podcast. Robin,
thank
is
you,
fabulous.
Alana, that
to
was
have
an
you
awesome
here.
Introduction.
Well, you are awesome. It's been fun because I've known you for a long time from when you were a student at Colorado State University years and years ago. I think I might have been your instructor for a couple classes. Let's tell us a little bit about your early influences. What drew you into fashion in your major?
I actually started when I was about 15. I was working at a ice cream store, and the lady next door who managed this men's clothing store came over one day and she said, "You're always here managing the store by yourself. You're 15. I'm thinking about opening a clothing store across the street." And I was like, my eyes just got really big. And I was like, "What's it called?" And she said, "A clothes encounter." And I was like, "Oh my God, I love that name." And I just looked at her and I was like, "I'm in." And she called me her assistant manager. I think I worked for her for about a year because, of course, I was very green. And she taught me a ton of stuff. She was from New York City. And she called me assistant manager. And then I found Decca in high school about the same time. And so with that, I really developed a lot of professional skill development in that course, but I also realized I could compete in apparel and accessories. And I ended up placing in a couple events in that in high school. So that kind of promoted the whole thing of trying to find a four-year program. And that's how I found CSU and then found you.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that background part and that you really started working in retail at age 15, 16. Wow. And how did all of this really spark entrepreneurship for you?
I think once I got out of school and I did the retail side of things, I realized that it was not what I thought I was going to be made to do. I learned a lot. But I realized at some point that there was more to the story and I felt like I was an innovative person. So I wanted to try something different. So it naturally crossed over to home fashion for me. And then just going out and finding all the ways to learn about that field, because I didn't really know anything about it. When I found it, I was in the jewelry industry and then somebody told me like, there's this place hiring. It was up in Glenwood Springs. And it was a furniture store and I was a little nervous because I didn't know really anything about it, but that person really pushed me and said, I think you'd be great at it. You're good at what you do at the jewelry store. So in the first year, I think I became almost the top salesperson the first year I was in it. And so I knew I had a knack for it, but part of that was because of my background in textiles, the fabrics, just knowing about fabrics was like a lot of it. And that crossed over from home fashion or personal fashion to home fashion really easily. So the entrepreneurial part of that was knowing that, hey, I have a strength. I need to capitalize on this. And how do I do that? So eventually we can talk more about that, what happened during COVID and what I found then too.
Okay. I agree with you about fabrics and how that is so important to have a strong understanding and basic knowledge of fabrics for a variety of industries.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we mentioned in your introduction about the fashion show at Colorado State University. Talk to us a little bit about that, about your experience with that and any leadership and innovation skills that you
gained. I have to compare that to an experience of a lifetime because not only did we get to have 90 people that we worked with, it was 30 student designers, 30 chair people, 30 designers who were making the clothes and then the models as well. So it was executing something and promoting something and then pulling it off with a wonderful, result. It was a 2-day sellout. And I don't think I'll ever forget the camaraderie that developed from that. And then, yes, you were my student teacher there. So I got to know you quite well that year. And I always just remember feeling like that was my Tour de France moment. Like I was on the podium that year. I was 21. I was feeling pretty good about myself. But I made so many good friends and so many good acquaintances and people that have been in my life, my whole life from that. And that was really the good takeaway was all those connections from that.
It was a wonderful, really excellent student-led program. And I was the instructor for that. I was a faculty member at that time, instructor at Colorado State. And it was just really an honor to work with you in that environment. And
you were one of those people that like stepped back and said, I know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. I don't have to micromanage them. And that was something then that I didn't so much appreciate because I didn't know any different. But when I looked at my history of other bosses or people who were above me, the micromanaging happens more than you'd like. So I appreciate that you didn't do that to us then.
No, I don't believe in micromanaging at all and providing support when needed. But give people the resources that they need and you get out of their way and let them do their job. Can you walk us through, because we mentioned that you were in jewelry and fine jewelry, and you mentioned a little bit of that transition, but what was that like to go from fine jewelry to home fashion? And because many people feel like career-wise, they should be able to plan it out and it should go like this. And generally it goes like
that this. That is so. Definitely how my career has been. The nice thing is it's well-rounded. So I can say I've tried a lot of things, but my strengths have definitely been in retail and fashion, jewelry, and home furnishings. So when I started in retail fashion, I thought I was going to be a buyer. That's what I went to school for. And then I didn't want to leave Colorado. And at the time I said, I'm just going to try the retail management segment. Did that for a few years and then realized it was a glamorized title. I felt like I was just really cleaning up after people in the dressing room. So I finally said, I think I'm going to try something else. And I'd always loved gems, jewelry. I'm not allergic to any of it. I loved that for a long time. But then, like I said, somebody else said, why don't you try this and the home furnishings end of it? And I've been in it ever since. I tried kitchen design for a couple of years too. So it's been a really unique experience and I'm really happy with how it just transcended naturally. And that's where it's been ever since and loving it still.
Great. That's great. You and I, over the last few months, have had some conversations about working with clients and you really have some really good ideas on how to provide customer service, work with clients, get the best results out of what they need and for their goals. And how do you use your own personal stories in design projects when you're working with clients? And how do you work with clients? Because people.
When I meet people, I try to make them feel as comfortable as I can because they're stepping in into an environment they don't sometimes know. And so one of the first questions I always ask is if you've been in before, because if they have been, they're probably a little bit more comfortable with what we do. But they also should know that you could hire an outside designer and they're going to charge you for their time, which, my gosh, they are worth it. But I'd like to say, when you visit with a design consultant, like in a furniture store, the more information you have, it's information is power. If you want to be more efficient with the whole process, knowing your situation, backing it up and thinking backwards to forwards. And when I say that, do you know your front door measurements? Do you know what style you're looking for? Have you been to other stores? Are you starting fresh or are you replacing what you have? If you're replacing what you have, you might even know the measurements of what you have already. So that's a good basis. But if you're looking for a big change, that's when a design consultant can come in and really help you with the layout and the budget and the palette. All of that comes into play. So it's like when you meet me, I'm going to get a pretty deep understanding of your lifestyle because I want to consult with you because you might have needs that are totally different from a family of four with three dogs. And so I really want to see, are they thinking they want this and maybe there's something better or is there an alternative? I always like to test people on what they think they want because I think once they see the options, they might go, oh, that's more versatile. Or, oh, I'm not going to live in that house very long. I probably want to go neutral. So when I first meet you, I want to learn a lot about you. But I also want to show you what we can do for you in that process, because I think there's a niche for everybody in every phase of life. There's certain places that are meant for that phase. And it doesn't take too many times to learn. It's better to buy nice than buy twice. So I always tell clients that it's a great quote. You will invest, but it's sometimes so worth it. But maybe to that college student right out of school, they're just like, I'm not ready for grown-up furniture yet. A lot of people say that even when they're grown-ups. I'm looking for grown-up furniture now. So it just depends on the phase of life they're in and what's going on. Sometimes there's a divorce. Sometimes there's a marriage or combining households. So it's challenging. Sometimes you can have two different people with two different design philosophies. And I always tease them and I say, there's this thing called two houses with a bridge in the middle. You meet for dates. because they can do what they want over there and you can do what you want over there and still be happy.
Oh, you think about it from your perspective, for young professionals, what trends are you noticing and how they approach?
I think it's a lot different unless they have parents who have guided them. If they've grown up with a good brand in their house, they understand quality. They understand the reason for the price. But these days, it seems like there's a lot of online shopping. And I'm sure you can listen to all the stories about, oh, I bought this, but it doesn't look anything like this when you get it. And it's just the quality of the picture sometimes just does not represent what the human eye can see in real life. And who knows, we might not ever get there, but it's very difficult to buy fabrics and buy rugs, especially online, because they can't photograph it quite right. Even when you take a normal iPhone picture, it's still not going to be exactly like it is in person. I always tell people it's always better in person, but if you don't set the expectation of, look, if you've never seen this, it may not be what you want, only because your lighting has a lot to do with how you're going to perceive that piece in your space. Lighting is key, and a lot of young shoppers don't realize that. It doesn't take them long to figure it out. Or like they really loved it during the daytime, but then during the nighttime, it got really dark. So there's always the change of light on something that can have effect. And then they also don't realize the value of window treatment because that protects it from fading. So all these things come into play that you don't buy furniture very often. So once you have that experience, you learn it didn't fit up my staircase. The Friends episode where he's yelling pivot, the sofa didn't get up stairs. So there's so many stories of those issues that it only takes once to learn. But they see price, they see convenience. That's where we always say they're going to come around to us eventually. It's just that learning process. And you can't tell somebody that. You can't show somebody that. They got to go through it. And so I just see that trend of a little bit more, I want it fast and I don't care. I just like how it looks. Yes. But then they realize what they looked at needs to feel good when they're sitting in it every day. So I call that the long-term happiness part of something. If you've planned it well and right, it's going to look great on delivery day. You won't have to, oh, that looks really old next to really new now, or that's too high next to that coffee table, end table, whatever's going on. So one thing affects it all. And that's where I just don't think they see that whole big picture yet. So when I'm in my role, I'm trying to help them see that end result and think backwards from it.
That makes sense. That makes absolute sense. So for preparing to meet with a design consultant when buying furniture, what are some tips that you would give?
Sure. What,
five top items that you would recommend for someone to bring to
As I just said, like online
consultant.
Isn't always the best place to shop as far as picking, but it's a great place to research. You can also use the add to cart buttons and see where your budget's going pretty quickly. I love those features that they show because there are some things online that are really helpful as far as visuals too. I think just going into stores and seeing who has what as well. But if you want to save yourself a trip, I would say doing that background research, reading reviews, and then thinking backwards again, is this merchandise going to fit through my doors? Is it going to go through to my bedroom door? That bedroom door might be 29 inches instead of my front door is 36. We always love to hear people say, I have double doors. And we're like, oh, good. No problem. Knowing your space measurements is a big one. Sometimes people just go shopping first and they don't realize what they have. And so that's where we always can say, we're going to come to your house and take those for you. And then that really wows them. Another thing that people don't think a lot about is knowing their ceiling height. It sounds silly, but like a standard ceiling is 8 feet. If I have to stand something up in your room, I need to know how much height I've got. So that's a big key one that people forget. And then I always ask this question because a lot of the times you go shopping thinking, okay, I need a sofa. It's just the sofa's on my brain. But you may not be living in that space for a long time. You might be renting. You might be temporarily there. is that sofa going to go with you to the next house, or do you want to sell it with the house? So sectionals are a big thing that I quiz people on, because that might fit that room in that house, but it's not going to fit the next house. So knowing that is a good thing too. Yeah. Do you have a lot of light in your space? Do you have window treatments currently? Do you have a lot of overhead lighting? At night, when you turn off the lights, sometimes you need task lighting to read or do work at your computer. So I always talk about that a lot. And then, are you working with any pieces you want to keep is a big one. Because if I don't know, oh, by the way, there's a crazy rug in there, I'm going to have a hard time working with that rug if I don't see it in person. So it can be challenging, because the big trend that really happened was everybody used to have carpet and patterned sofas. Then everybody went to wood floors, engineered floors, with rugs that were patterned. And then, of course, if you put a patterned sofa with a patterned rug, that got a little crazy. So these days, the trend is more for a solid sofa, adding patterns in the pillows and the chairs and the rug, the accessories. So that was a huge process that happened with great rooms more than anything, I think, too. So knowing what you're committed to of other pieces in the space, and if you do have a sentimental value to something, can we repurpose it? Can we restain it? Can we make it work with the new introductions to the house? Or is there, we are not doing one thing to this. It's so important to me. My grandma gave it to me. However that works, we need to know that ahead of time. Because the end, you want it to look cohesive. And sometimes people don't care about the cohesive part of it. It means a lot to them. Or they traveled somewhere and they love it. So all those things are like, I always wish that clients had all that information the first meeting. It doesn't always happen. But that's where, you know, you get to know them, you go to their house and you find more information that way.
Yeah, that's really a great list. And so thank you, and things to think about, because I don't think people think that comprehensively. When they're,
it can be a little bit much to think shopping. About, but I try to give a lot of people that food for thought early, because usually they'll go home and digest what I told them and they'll start thinking about their space more. And I think that that just gives them that initial, oh yeah, I didn't think about this. I didn't think about that. And if you do, it's going to be a really successful end result.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. On the flip side, young designers, what are some strategies you have for them that you can provide some mentorship strategies on how to work with clients?
Usually, I want to say there's a couple things I want them to do first.
Medicine can help.
So, I think mentorship is huge. There's a great program that I just learned about at CSU, and they just started offering it this fall. And it's basically a concentration of interior products and retailing as part of their interior architecture and design program.
Yes,
I would love to see that curriculum, because I think that would be the person who would just naturally step into my job after graduation. It could even involve internships. I think that would be a perfect place for people interested in this field to get more acquainted with it, and then be already probably pretty comfortable with the items before they get to any kind of retail establishment that has design skills. I happen to work for a company that just has a lot of design training, and that can even further their training too. But I would tell them just to shop places, understand timelines. How long does it take for that company to make that or get that to you? Because that ends up being a pressure point, a pain point for a lot of people, because they might want it tomorrow, but your company doesn't do tomorrow. They do 4 to 12 weeks, or maybe it's really custom. Maybe it takes a year because it's coming across the world. So all of that is just getting them ready to set expectations for their clients so they don't disappoint them. A lot of people might say, oh, I don't tell them that time frame. Then you're going to be telling them later and they're going to be telling you, but you told me this long. Well, it fluctuates. So I think that's huge for new people to know, is that it does fluctuate a lot in this business. and it's never perfect. It's deliveries are never perfect. Damage happens, things like that. I used to think that, oh my gosh, everything comes in perfect, doesn't it? When you have moving parts and you have delivery drivers and delivery trucks and bad weather, things can shift around in a truck and get damaged. So just knowing the red flags, I think, ahead of time, where those pain points can be and how to overcome them would be really good education for them to have too. And of course, talking to designers in the field, following designers online, becoming parts of Facebook groups early on, network like crazy. I think there's so many great designers out there and they all have different philosophies. And I think you just have to align yourself with what yours are, because you're not going to have exactly that same philosophy as someone else. Everybody is different. And so I always say, talk to everybody, talk to the ones who own their own business versus the ones who are working in design firms too. You get that sensation of, wait a second, to own my own business is a lot different than if I'm working for someone else. And I told you I was going to talk about COVID in 2020 before. That's where I learned that I thought I wanted to go out on my own. And I realized there is so much to having your own business that you don't realize is covered by the company you work for. So if you're not prepared to do that, it's probably not a big decision. And I wasn't. So I made the decision to stay working for a design firm. And it was a good decision at that time, because of course, during COVID, everybody went boom in our industry. A lot of other companies went bust. And so I learned a lot of how the different timeframes, the economy can affect things too. So another thing for young designers to know for sure is everything fluctuates. So there's ups and downs in every industry, and how to get through that. I think that would be a huge question as a young designer that I would ask a seasoned designer. How have you gotten through the rough times? How have you gotten through the good times? Were you too busy? Did you need more help? That type of thing. Because it's a very detailed industry. And when you're working on one project, your brain is on every detail of that one project. But sometimes you have 20 projects. And so when people come in, they're very focused on their project, which is great. They should be. There's a lot of details they have to figure out. So that's why I say on the other end is the client needs to be prepared. Of course, the designer will be preparing with them too. So I think those are the points that I would probably say to a new designer, this is what you could do. And it would be really helpful, because it would have been really helpful for me to know that then, but I didn't know it back then when I was in college. I thought I was going to be a buyer. So if I would have had the interior background, the interior design background, I might have gone this direction and said that. And
but you graduated from a program that really provided a nice balance of all of those skills. And I do want to touch on one thing that you mentioned, which is basically project management. You have, you talked about the detail in working with one client, but you might have 20 of them that you're working with. How do you manage that? And I think project management tips is always helpful to anyone. And there's courses, degrees, and all types of things and all types of tools out there. But how do you manage 20 clients at one time with detail and specificity? I can't say it.
Right. Specificity is, I think, what you're going to say. So specifically, no. I go into work early because I want to be prepared when the door opens. And so I've done my pre-work, side work, whatever you want to call it. I've checked all my clients' statuses on current reports. I've done the background if I have to dig into why something is not coming the way it should, or follow up after delivery, those type of things. I call that the busy work. And I get that out of the way before my day starts. So I have the new person coming in that I can dedicate my time to. And sometimes that, of course, works better than other days. But when you get that overwhelm, which always happens, a break from it, believe it or not, and then coming back to it fresh, even if it's just 15 minutes, even if it's a day, you don't have to answer every email at every second. I learned that pretty quickly in my 10 years, or this 10 years of being at the job I'm at now. And I think I realized, like, it's just furniture. It's not the world is ending. So I don't want to say that like it doesn't matter. Of course, everything matters to people in different ways. But I feel like my project management skills are, there's a system to it. And there are systems out there that help you do that as well. So there's a lot of things that have come along technologically that make it easier. And I think that's where designers who are out on their own can really find some good time management skills from those, because they might not have that. Not every creative person has the detail-oriented side to them, too. When you do those tests for what would I be good at in life, I found out that I'm creative but analytical, too. And so there's a lot of people in this field that are both those. And so it, like, both sides of your brain has to work a lot for that. So there's a lot of detailed thought, but there's also a lot of, oh, let's think outside the box. Let's be innovative. Let's create a new way of doing this that we didn't think about before. And that to me is like my joy of discovery. Okay. I love the idea brewing. I love it coming to fruition. I love that you wanted to design your room around your 70-pound Labradoodle. You know what I mean? It's just fun to have something different every day instead of the same monotonous type of design, because we get to see every walk of life, every need, every wish fulfillment happen. So it's a really fun job.
Thank you. That's really great. You hit on so many important points there, and that balance and taking a break too is so important. And that's something that we've had many guests on the podcast mention, that you need to, you know, step away, that balance in life. So branding, as we talk about all of this, and as people think about their spaces and environmental branding, whether it's your home, your office, your Zoom room that you're in, your video room, that type of space. What is branding? Because that's something we talk quite a bit about here at Innovation Insights.
I've really come to know this during COVID too. I had time on my hands. I got laid off for 2.5 months. So I really started following a lot of different people on social media, and everybody was giving webinars and seminars for free. And I was like, this is great. Like, when does this ever happen? All these knowledgeable people are coming forward with this, and I'm just sitting there going, I'm a sponge. I'm listening. So one of the things I learned is, I feel like knowing how you're different. How do you stand out? How do you show the world what you're good at? And using that as your strength and capitalizing on that versus trying to be like everybody else out there. You got to be that purple wall in the house that people are going to remember. Remember that house we saw? The one with the purple wall. Oh, remember Robin? She's the one that had the great idea about our sofa. So whatever it is, I just think you've got to be able to stand out and say, that is Robin's philosophy or Robin's touch. Or a lot of the times I don't think I'm putting my personal touch on a house, but I might say, have you thought about this? And then that customer's touch is what gets put on the house, which is how I believe it should be. I'm not a design diva. I don't necessarily say you have to do something, but I always try to stand out in the way that I give service or educate or follow up. I just feel like if you stand out to somebody, they're going to remember you and they're going to remember that relationship. I had somebody the other day come in and they're like, you told us to remember the song Rockin' Robin. And that was 3 years ago. They remembered me saying this and they came in and I said, how did you remember my name? They're like, you told us to think of Rockin' Robin. And that was like, oh my God, it worked. I don't get a lot of people telling me that, but I thought that was great because at least I thought, okay, how are they going to remember me? That song will help, because you don't always remember names and I don't expect to. But a lot of branding too relies on a little bit of your first impression to those people. And that's why, like, when they come into my space, I feel like they're a guest in my house. And so I want them to feel at home with me and in the location that they're at, because if they don't, they're not going to be there very long. You're not going to get to know them. They're going to spin through and bye, next place. So I really do think that dressing professionally, you don't want to be fidgeting with things. If you're uncomfortable with the way you're feeling, you're going to look silly. I say, this is a really good tip. And I did this in the fashion show, actually. I was a model in the first year I was in one of the shows, and I watched a videotape of myself, and I was doing this funky little thing with my elbow. It was going back and forth. And when I saw it on the video, I was like mortified. I was like, oh my God, I need to correct that. So when you see it and you think it looks funny, somebody else would think it is too. So it's like a self-critical thing of like, just look at yourself. Are you feeling awkward? If you are, then it's something you want to change. I also think for branding, you learn about what you're good at. I wasn't that great at kitchen design as I am with picking fabrics and colors. So I think you start to see where your strengths are too. And that becomes part of your brand as well. I did read a book, How the World Sees You by Sally Hogshead. And it's all about what type of personality you have and how you can stand out and differentiate yourself. And I followed her for forever. And I just really, after I read that book, I was like, yeah, I need to be different. I need to stand out and be my own brand and be proud of it. And I think a lot of these days you hear about branding a lot more than you used to. And so if it doesn't stay consistent, I think that's where people go, well, wait a second. That's not what Robin is about. I trust Robin. I don't want to do this other thing because I believe she knows what she's doing. So that knowledge and that wisdom is behind that brand too.
Oh, great. Thank you. Those again are really great nuggets that people can take away too. And you mentioned about social media too. So how have you integrated that into your brand and just at work?
I actually, for a short amount of time, you talked about me having a business. I called it Rocket Robin, and it was basically before everything started blowing up, it was a virtual design assistant business. And I started it in a very slow time in my life where I really needed to feel like I need to do what I love, but I'm good at helping other people do what they love too. And so social media became an area where I felt like I took a lot of classes. I started learning how to post, how to do things where you could just keep people informed. And it was no cost, it was low cost. And so I really wanted to learn how to help other designers do that. And so this was back in 2014. It was short-lived because I went back to work when I moved back to living in Highlands Ranch, Colorado now. But when I moved back, I started working for my company that I work for now. And so it became a full-time position that I absolutely had to have as a single mom. So anyway, the social media part of it just crossed over into, I used it for myself to promote myself, to say, here's what I'm doing. Here's my projects. Here's how maybe this looks like your house. Maybe that'll inspire you to do this for your house. A lot of my friends, I would ask them questions sometimes on social media. If you could ask a designer a question, what would you ask? And a few of them asked me some really good questions. And I remember one of them was, how do I mix metals? And I was like, that is a great question. And a lot of people probably think that, but don't always ask. And when I answered her, she was like, oh, that's great information. But that kind of stuff you can repost on social media, because when you get the good question, it means somebody's very inquisitive, curious. They want to know more about what you do. And I think once you get those questions rolling, that's when you can really capitalize on how do I fulfill that need. And so that's the whole purpose of social media, really, is to get the need fulfilled. So I find that experience helped me greatly. Sometimes I get a little overwhelmed by all of it because there's so much stuff still coming that's all new. So I have to pick and choose which ones I really like the platforms for and feel are effective, because some of them I don't feel are as effective for my field, where other people might feel that's perfect for my field. So again, that's branding too. Go to the social medias where you feel like you're going to get that audience that you want.
There are some that you feel are effective for
you. I guess still for me, Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn are my top three. I do still love Pinterest for ideas. I haven't really capitalized on doing like anything there as far as driving business. And then my own website, I'm my company's website too. The nice thing is the exposure of that is wide reaching. And you may not want to be on social media sometimes, and you might go a little quieter than other times. But what I've found is that if you've got your name out there, you've got your reputation out there, just like restaurants, people look at restaurant reviews before they go eat there. They'll look at your reviews too. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy and pleased that has been a good result for me. I do have good reviews from social media, and that's through actual experiences though too. So that's helped.
That makes sense. And you've mentioned being driven by forward-thinking individuals and organizations. And could you give some examples of such influences that's propelled your personal and professional growth?
I'm motivated by the big picture a lot. So when people are thinking forward in something, it really makes me respect that. I like seeing how a program can help me make my clients' lives better. Just a couple programs that I've really learned a lot from because I thought they were so innovative. Floor Planner, Design Files, Hunter Douglas. They're really good, notable examples of companies that I feel are always thinking forward. And how can I make this an improvement for my customers' everyday life? And when I see that, I just get so impressed. And I follow that company and I watch what they do and I'm always liking their posts. I'm always like, wow, that's a really different twist on something. Or this is exactly what I was thinking, but somebody finally did it. It's just fun to see ideas and thoughts come to fruition. And so when I see that, I want to be part of that. And I feel like I generate to people like that. And I don't know, it's just always been part of my life that has been a facet.
Great. Again, we're so thrilled to have you with Innovation Insights as a consultant. And so what are some of the goals and projects that you have with us?
Right here, what we're doing right now, I've never done a podcast. And so doing podcasts and webinars, it's forward thinking for me right now because I've never done it. And I'm a little nervous still, but I think that's a strong way to connect to people when you can learn more on their own schedules too. It's not, I'm only on this time of day. If I recorded it or I've done it in small doses, I can get people when they really want to listen to me. And so I think that's been an eye-opener for me is you can't always be available to listen to your favorite podcasts or do your webinars when you want to. So doing them and then recording them for when people can watch them, I think is something I'm really interested in learning on how to do. I always say knowledge is power, but if you have a curious mind, you'll inspire others to expand their knowledge too. So that's where I am hoping that this goes. I just feel like it's a pathway and it's going to open up other doors. And I hope other people join us. And I hope that going forward, it's a huge success.
Me too. Me too. We're excited to have you. And even today during our conversation, I made some notes of some more ideas that I have. We'll discuss those. But you balance a lot in your life. And you mentioned love of photography and fashion and personal time and your family. And balance is something that we talk quite a bit about also with Innovation Insights, because we can't ever really just focus on one part of our life all the time. Sometimes people do. It's hard to do that and have success in all of those areas. So how do you balance?
I'm a single mom. I'm a caregiver to my mom, who's almost 79. I have a full-time job. I have a part-time job. So my personal life is about that much. But I have to make every part of that enjoyable. And I always think to myself, give your all when you're present at whatever role you're in at that moment. So if you can't, if you get distracted, that's where you have to remember your health is wealth. You've got to focus on, you have to be healthy. You have to be strong. If you can't do that for you, everybody else around you that you have to take care of is going to suffer too. So that love of photography, that love of fashion, that spending time with loved ones sometimes goes on the back burner. But if you don't take time out to spend time doing the things you love like that, it will take its toll. And I call that, of course, everyone calls it burnout. That is the worst place to be at. I think burnout is where you just say, I give up. I can't do it anymore. You're a capable person. You've just maybe spread yourself too thin. And so maybe you have to let go of something that had to be let go. Maybe it was last priority. So my photography and my fashion have fallen by the wayside. It doesn't mean it's gone. I follow all of it on social media. I still love to look at it and see it and appreciate it. Yeah. But I just don't have that time to give to it anymore. So I just have to say, okay, there's a time to work and a time to play. And I've always thought that. And it's really worked pretty well for me. I feel like I'm a pretty balanced person. There's been a few times in the last year that things went a little hectic in my personal life, but I try to keep professional life and personal life a little bit separate too. Doesn't always work. But I feel like I'm doing an okay job of it for now.
That's great, and great advice to people too. So thank you for that. As we're all about innovation, and we asked every guest this last question, how do you define innovation?
I define it as thinking forward on how a thing or a process can be better, improved, new. Maybe it's a twist on something old. Inspiration makes the world go round. And so I believe that anybody who can say they're innovative is an inspirational person to be around. And so I feel like that word and inspiration go right hand in hand with each other. And I just see that as a light to follow. It just makes me happy, and it makes me driven, and it makes me motivated. It's a powerful word. And I've always loved that word. Innovation is really powerful.
Thank you. Thank you. I love the connection between inspiration and innovation. That makes sense. So, Robin, thank you for joining us today and sharing your insights. And you really have given some wonderful personal stories, but also some actionable steps that people can take. So thank you for that. And sharing your career journey too, which is really fascinating, and your perspectives on design.
Oh, no, thank you for inviting me on, because I've really been looking forward to this. And I hope that maybe there's more in the future too, but it was really a pleasure to be on your podcast. Thank you.
Absolutely. And I'm sure that we'll have you back again too. All of our guests are just so fascinating and have such intricate lives and innovative lives that I'm sure that we'll have you back again. So for our listeners, I hope that this conversation really inspires you to think more deeply about your personal life and personal branding, and how you can strategically combine the two. And so think about that, and also think about how your environments and how working with designers can really enhance the environment that you're working in or living in or aspire to be in. So again, this is really just fascinating information and insights from Robin. So stay tuned to the Innovation Insights podcast for more inspiring stories like this. Please follow us on our social media platforms. And for more episodes, put some comments, some likes on our YouTube channel. And we're just really thankful to having you here. So as always, keep innovating and keep making a difference. So as always, keep innovating, keep dreaming, and keep making a difference.